Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTube, hi, missed you, bud. Hey, good, fancy seeing you here, huh? And Nikias, it is time to hoop it up.
It is a welcoming back to the YouTube channel and fancy seeing all of y'all here. Appreciate y'all rocking with us. If you are new here, just a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the basketball. We have a lot to talk about as we have roughly a week of NBA action to kind of suss through. But we are the Dunker Spot. We've been podding since 2021. We've been underneath the channel since the 2023 playoffs. Last season was our first full season here. We're entering year two on the full season side here. NBA and WNBA content. Naturally, the NBA take a precedence right now as the W season ended. We record twice a week. We'll have drops on Tuesdays for the YouTube folks and audio only on Fridays. We'll sprinkle in some Thursdays, but mostly Fridays. So subscribe, come rock with us. We got you twice a week talking a whole lot of hoop through an X's and O's lens. So hope you enjoy. Hope you have some fun with us. Steve, let's get into it. We got about a weekend. Everyone's played at least twice. Most teams have played three games so far as we record on this Monday afternoon. Who's caught your eye so far this year?
Well, you're never going to guess it, Nikias.
What we got?
Especially coming from me, any long-term dunkers, you'll fully understand this. Mm-hmm. I would like to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, this is a change for our long-time dunkers.
They... obviously, undefeated. First time in a long time they've had to start the season like this. But I think it's important to note kind of what they're building at this point. And it's important to salute Anthony Davis for what he's done to start this season. Mm-hmm. And I think the numbers obviously jump off the page. 34 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.7 steals, 2.3 blocks. It's only 3 games. But that's a lot of very good play in a short amount of time. So for him to establish himself as not only being more aggressive, but also, hey, I'm going to score 30 a night. That kind of changes things. And so in my mind, it's looking at the formula that the Lakers are having. When it comes to AD, one of the things that I've liked so far early in the season is just how they've worked to move him around offensively. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's not just post-ups. It's not just 15 seconds into a post-up. He's involved in their movement sets. He's involved in their elbow action. They're able to go with inverted pick and roll with him to get him looks. Also, we've gotten to see them getting a couple rolls off that. You never know if it's going to be off-ball screens for him or someone else. So that opens up the offense for them, which I think has been a key piece. Tempo has still been an issue at times, so it's not like this is stamped, everything is fixed. But when you have Anthony Davis and you're using him in this way, you have the offense where you have a little bit more movement, so Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell can feel more involved in different ways, ditto for Rui Hachimura. That just means, hey, we don't have to depend on LeBron James to throw and play at that type of level for us to have success. You know, I'll float out my analogy. We'll hope it works today. You know, it's like instead of LeBron having to pitch 7 outstanding innings just to keep you in the game, he can come in the bottom of the 6th, throw a heater, and now, hey, I've done my job. And we saw that in the Sacramento game where it's like, oh, there he goes. Yeah, that's right. There's LeBron. Back to Anthony Davis, I think the other thing is the aggression that he's shown. When he's driving from the elbow, when he's driving from the perimeter, it's with a purpose. He's looking to hit first. He's hitting that spin move. And his ability to get to the free throw line early in the season is what stood out to me so far. Mm-hmm. So last year, mini rabbit hole, he went to the line 10-plus times, 20 times. He only had 2 games with 15 or more free throw attempts last year. He already has 2 games with 15 or more free throw attempts this year.
That's big.
So you can kind of see how that mindset is shifting and what that's doing for the Lakers balance-wise. I also think the defense, again, while not perfect, they are playing with purpose. They are doing a really good job of trying to pressure the ball. If you're going off ball, trying to get into your body. I think sometimes they do, you know, if they don't have contact first, it can get a little interesting. But you see the effort there. And I think being able to switch 1 through 4 is helpful. So, hey, we know what we're doing. We're switching. We're going to work to contain. The key, of course, is keeping the ball in front. But when they're able to switch 1 through 4, they go double big. They can switch even more. you can kind of see how that's having an impact for them, because now when they get those stops, we can get a couple pushes. We can run that a little bit. So that's kind of having an effect for them. And I think Anthony Davis defensively has done a really good job, because it's hard to nail down exactly what he's going to do defensively, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
In the past, it's been, okay, we know AD is going to be in a drop. We have X amount of space. XYZ happens. We've seen times where AD is doing a hard hedge. We've seen times where AD is dropped to a late switch. We've seen times where he's at the level. So being able to mix those things up kind of takes the automatics out of it for an offense. I think that's important going forward. So it's more just the formula that they're building that I think has really intrigued me. The success has been important, but the way they're kind of building it for the long term is what I think is key.
No, I think that's really good stuff. And just to quickly bounce off of the defensive versatility for Anthony Davis first, as that has long been a calling card for AD. I think he's been a DPOY candidate, and you know, you ask AD himself, he thinks he should have a little bit more respect put in on his name in that regard for the award. But he's just terrifying on and off the ball. And like, so much of the Lakers' overall versatility is because you can ask AD to execute pretty much anything and feel good about it. And so just watching them and watching games with you naturally kind of sparked the thought for me, like, wait, they are switching quite a bit. I want to see how often they're doing this, at least in pick and rolls. And so going back to the Darvin Ham era very quickly, year one under Darvin Ham, the Lakers switched roughly 14% of the pick and rolls that they saw. That was 28th in the league. Last season, switched about 21% of the pick and rolls that they saw. That was 19th. So far under J.J. Redick, they are switching roughly 39% of the pick and rolls that they are seeing, which is easily the top rank in the league. Now, granted, three-game sample, that may shift. When they get different opponents, we'll see how often they're willing to switch. But to your point, they are layering in a lot of things, and ultimately their comfort being able to switch one through four has helped them flatten out opposing offenses. So I really like that portion. And even zooming out with the defense, AD's been outstanding. Like, this, I don't think we've seen the peak version of the Laker defense yet. Like, per Clean in the Glass, they are 18th in defense right now heading into Monday night's action. That isn't where they want to be. They've been a top 10 half-court defense, though. Like, the one thing that's kind of popped has been matching up in transition. And I most sort of look at the guards in that regard, to where it's a failure to match up with someone. You get those cuts in behind them. And so I think those are little things that could be cleaned up. Like, grab a body. And because they're switching a lot anyway, and because in theory, like, you have AD and LeBron on the back line, if you're able to grab a body, LeBron in particular can scram you out of there if he's locked in. So I think that's something that's going to perk up. And if the Lakers can be solidly a top 10 defense in the league, and now you have this offense that is more centered around what Anthony Davis can do, you move him around, you sprinkle in the movement sets, you look at the comfort and pick and roll with Austin Reeves in particular. He's done a really good job of leading the dance when he sees drops so far. And to your point about LeBron James, at any given moment, oh, this broke down, let's just go empty side with Anthony Davis. Let's let LeBron James pick you apart. Or let's just toss it to LeBron on the block. He can move people. He's going to see if you're going to send help. I can toss this dart to the opposite corner if necessary. Like, to have that kind of foundation of movement and then be able to lean on those two as like the final boss of their offense, that's a fun formula to kind of build on. And so I'm excited about what I've seen from them so far. Actually, going back to the defense, the scheme versatility isn't just with AD. Like you mentioned, Jackson Hayes, him coming in, doing able to sprinkle in more switching, going across the board there. Like, we've seen Jackson Hayes in a deep drop. We've seen him hedge. We've seen him switch. Like, he's building a level of trust, or he has a level of trust in them to execute multiple things. And I think that's something that should pay off in the long run. And so upside defensively, the offense looks good. Yeah, it's just been really good stuff for the Lakers so far. Curious to see how it keeps rolling.
Another thing I'll point out, it's D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves being in a place where it's not just about the scoring. They're also making some plays. You know, it's a little thing for D'Lo to start the season with 3 straight games with 5 assists. That's a positive thing. It really helps when Austin Reeves is also doing that. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see the playmaking comes in a little bit more of an organic fashion for them, which I think is important, because they're going to need those two down the stretch and to really hit the best level they can. I also point to the bench, right? So they're only going 9 deep right now. But with Jackson Hayes, with Gabe Vincent, with Dalton Knecht, with Max Christie, those are guys that understand what their purpose is when they come in the game. And I think that's important. Gabe Vincent, I'm going to come in, play defense. Shots are there, I'm going to take them. Dalton Kennett's been really good, and you can also use him in movement sets, which helps balance your lineups out.
They've done some fun stuff.
They sure have. Max Christie defending, and then Jackson Hayes. I mean, he's active, you know, so this is a scenario where this might be the best spot for him to be able to be himself. So that's kind of like where you start to turn the noggin on and be like, hey, I see what's going on. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. When you are a team and you have early success, that can boost you in ways you don't anticipate, because now the buy-in that you had grows stronger. Hey, this is working. Let's keep doing this. And now it becomes a different scenario. So just wanted to give them a quick salute to start the season.
Okay. I like it. I like it. Do you want to alternate teams, or did you have someone else you want to shout out?
Alternating teams is generally a good idea and something that I enjoy. But to keep it consistent, and because I find it to be funny, let me give a quick shout out to the Boston Celtics.
Okay. You're just taking the premier rivalry in the league to start off the season.
We're back, baby.
There we go.
But I think for me with the Celtics, and this is not a team that we spent a lot of time on in the preseason because they're a machine, but to start the season in this way, they have proven once again that they are a machine. And I think they have sparked a lot of conversation about three-point shooting and three-point volume. And the one thing I will point out with the Boston Celtics is you have to pay attention to the type of shots that they generate. There are some quick ones. They will throw some up. But when they get you in rotation, they move the ball in such a fashion, they're going to create a great shot for themselves. And they just have they're working with a stronger understanding, which is kind of scary, based on how good they were last year. Mm-hmm. But there's no real lull. You know, offensively, they get a stop. They're getting out and going. Jason Tatum, I think, has looked really fantastic, smooth with the pull-ups. But they have a certainty about them.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of feel that when you watch them. You know, you think a play is broken down. Jaylen Brown has it. Nope, Drew Holiday, I'll come screen for you. Now we play out of that. Jason Tatum, oh, let's move the ball. Let's kick it. So it's been fun to watch them kind of just start the defense of this title. And then defensively, we're just going to bother you. Like, you know, we can switch a whole lot of people. And we can move Al Horford around the board. So it's like, cool, Detroit, you guys got a lot more movement. That's Al Horford guarding Tobias Harris. And so we're going to switch everything else that you do, and you're not going to have a fun time. Hey, Karl-Anthony Towns, welcome to the Knicks. Here's Drew Holiday. would you enjoy that? It's been fun to watch them do that. I think Peyton Pritchard also off the bench has been doing what he's supposed to do to start this year. But I just wanted to give them a hat tip. You know, I mean, they're still the best team in the league. And so it felt nice or right to start off the season giving them a salute.
No, I got you. Like, the Boston offense has been so absurd. And you mentioned the Drew note and Al Horford being moved around. They're still doing enough of the process things that we enjoy. Like, Boston is 16th in defense, and I don't think anyone cares right now. One, because again, it's been three games. So like, that's just going to shift. But like, that kind of speaks to the level of trust that we collectively have in them. They've done it. They have the strong foundation. And on top of that, the three-point shooting has been ridiculous. And I say ridiculous complimentary. Like, as you alluded to, some of the conversation around Boston and what it means for where the league is going. Enjoy hoop, man. I don't know. But beyond that, they're shooting 44% from three. And they're taking 51 threes a game. They have seven players taking at least three threes a game right now. And the only player shooting below 37.5% among that group is Sam Hauser, who we know can shoot the absolute leather off the ball. But I think beyond three-point shooting, you already talked about Jason Tatum, so I won't hang here too long. He just has such a command of the offense. It has just been somewhat linear progression with him as a ball handler. Going from I can boogie and ISO to I can run more pick and roll off getting dropped. I've hit enough shots here or more coverages. We're up and up two on the ball. This is something that you've spoken about in particular. And now I can just make plays. And now we, you know, really last year, but we've reached the manipulation portion with Jason Tatum. And we've also reached the I know what your coverage is. I don't even have to work that hard. I know you're bringing someone up to the level. I will take a singular dribble and then get off of this. And then space where I need the space. Like, I don't need to take three dribbles to try to move the weak side. I know where it's going to be. I can make this easy. And so the three-point shooting for Jason Tatum has been ridiculous to start the year. Shooting a shade under 49% from three on nearly 12 threes a game. Looking at the NBA.com stats, he's shooting 48% on pull-up threes. I don't think that number holds. The jumper does look smoother. This is something that I noted in preseason. I don't know if it's going to be 48% on pull-up threes. But if he's solidly good, and more importantly, if teams fear him to that degree, that's just going to open up everything else. But the other stat I want to drop with Jason Tatum is, again, it's three games. I know competition is going to get tougher. They have a Milwaukee game coming up very soon as we record. But 18 assists to three turnovers through the first three games. Kind of speaks to, again, the command of the offense and the comfort that he has and what he's seen. He's getting off of it. The ball is moving all around a lot. And if Boston could just outshoot you to this degree, it's just kind of tough on top of that. But defense is going to perk up. He's been really good. Three-point shooting for Jaylen Brown has been very good. Drew Holiday's been moved around the board. Derek White has been aggressive to start the season. As you mentioned, now Horford's been moved around a lot. It's just been a lot of fun watching the Celtics team play basketball, at least for me. Maybe in the minority, but hey, it is what it is. Any more shouts or any more Boston thoughts before we move?
Oh, well, I'll just quickly point out, like, three-point volume is important. Math is very great, but it's not always going to be the game changer, the game winner. So just keep that in mind, especially early in the season. I would just wait until more of these teams get more tape on their opponents and can now prepare in a different way. You'll kind of see a shift. I'll just throw that out there, just letting you know. Probably not with Boston, because that's what they do. But I'm just letting everybody know. Just setting it up for you. Can I continue to be shameless, Nikias?
It's a funny way to put that, but sure.
I would like to talk about the Los Angeles Clippers.
Okay.
I have had a very fun time watching the Clippers this season. I know expectations were a little bit lowered, obviously with Kawhi trying to get right, changes the math. That first game in the new arena, the Intuit Dome, I was into it. Ha! The atmosphere was tremendous and great. But I think the thing about this Clippers team is they are going to defend. Like, you can say whatever you want about the discourse. You can talk about them in any way, believe in them what you want. They are going to defend you. And they're going to keep defending you, and they're going to make it tough on you. With the size and length that they have, the multiple defenders we've seen off the bench, you're bringing in Nick Batum, you're bringing in Chris Dunn. We know what Darren Jones Jr. And Terrence Mann can do. They get after you on that end. Mm-hmm. And then offensively, you're seeing them try to piece things together. I think James Harden's been very, very good to start this season. As far as, you know, it's a little different. This is not necessarily the isolation James Harden type beat, but it's a lot of James Harden and pick and roll. I'm going to read the defense. I'm going to make a play. I'm going to get downhill. If you're in a drop, here's Zubac. You got a late roll. If you came in on that drop, you just skip past Norman Powell. Hey, I'm going to hunt this mid-range pull-up in pick and roll, which he sprinkled in last year. But hey, no, I'm just going to throw this out there. We're going to get here. He's getting downhill. He's making the right reads, making plays. I think, 16 assists against Denver in that loss. But he's continuously helping them. The tricky part for the Clippers, and one, Zubac has been a monster to start the season.
I was about to say, hey, listen.
He's been an absolute monster. He's been an absolute monster. James has made a lot of plays for him, but he's also finishing. So we got to salute Zubac. Norman Powell is now their movement shooter. So, hey, we need to run some staggers or we need some movement. Norman Powell, make it happen. Late in the clock, Norman Powell, make it happen. The tricky part for the Clippers is they still have the same issue of dealing with teams switching against them. Mm-hmm. And things can still bog down tempo-wise. They can still get slow. So we've seen, I think, in all three of these games, Clippers have lead. Clippers are doing good things. Clippers slow down offensively. The game is tied. Clippers take back the lead. The game is tied. So it's like this eternal tennis match, because when teams switch, okay, do we go to Zubac? Do we exploit that matchup? Are we going too slow? Are we going too fast? But I like the base of their defense. I like the way that James Harden has started this season. I like what's it called? The bald-headed aggression off the bench.
Excuse me.
Sorry. But I would say keep an eye on the Clippers, man. They're pretty fun.
Okay. No, that's fair. I'll say quick couple of notes on that front. On the switching portion, I can't believe you dropped the bench note right there. But on the switching front, they haven't seen a super high volume of switching yet per second spectrum. They've seen switches on roughly 20% of their pick and rolls so far. That's 16th in the league right now. But on those possessions that they do see switches, 0.69 points per possession, that is a bottom five mark in the league. So
nice.
Out. Gosh darn it. Not so nice for the Clippers. So I would imagine the volume of switches will rise if they cannot figure out that portion. Like, it was fun for me as a basketball fan watching the Clippers Suns game in particular. Like, one, it was just opening up the Intuit Dome. The atmosphere was crazy. But watching James Harden just go into predator mode, like, hey, you're Tyus Jones. I am bigger than you, and you're not any of those other tall people. You get over here. Let's see where the help is coming from. I can drive away from this and get to the free throw line. Just watching him hunt out the switches, like having someone like James Harden, it does provide an answer to that. But to your point, I do worry about how often they may have to tap that button, especially as they wait for Kawhi Leonard to make his return at some point. Hopefully he's just good. So that is going to be something worth keeping an eye on. But to the overall defense point, top five defense right now in the league for cleaning the glass. I just want to quickly shout out that Zubac has remained very good on the interior. He's been a monster on both ends of the floor. Chris Dunn, brother. I enjoy watching Chris Dunn fly around on defense, him navigating screens, him at the Clippers, at least early on, they've been a pretty aggressive nail help team. And honestly, because I've seen Chris Dunn in other spots, I don't know how much of that is by design by Ty Lue or Chris Dunn saying, actually, I'm a basketball player and I know how to make things happen. And so if my guy space one pass away, I'm just going to stand right here anyway. And I trust myself to get back out and get a deflection. So I would love to talk to Ty Lue on that front. Like, how much leeway do you give a guy like that to just be himself versus maintaining the shell of your defense? I think that's an interesting conversation to have. But no, Chris Dunn's been flying all over the place. As you mentioned in different terms, continue to trend with Kai Jones, like popped in the preseason. Also giving him positive minutes right now off the bench. But the Clippers are going to be annoying. I don't know if they're going to be good yet, but they are indeed going to be annoying. And I think that was it for you for the quick hitters.
That has completed my trio of teams that I wanted to talk about on this particular episode.
Okay, fair enough. Well, then I will move out east. I'd like to start the bidding with the Cleveland Cavaliers, Steve. I think heading into the season, I had a feeling they were going to be good. They were good last year. Just wanted them to be healthy. But, like, we know Donovan Mitchell is their best player. We know he's a top 10 to 12 guy, and on any given night, he can outduel anyone. But the bigger questions around this Cav team, I think, would be, hey, small defensive backcourt with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, and front court shooting slash spacing, but more so on the shooting side with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. And so through that lens, the two most important players for me for this Cavs season, and who can really dictate how far they go, how successful the run is, would be Darius Garland and Evan Mobley. Mobley's your cornerstone. Garland, yet to be a franchise point guard, has played an all-star level before last year, injury-riddled season. Him trying to gel back with Donovan Mitchell was kind of odd. You bring in Kenny Atkinson, you get this group in healthy. And I was just curious to see what it was going to look like. What is this offense going to look like? Because I didn't really have questions about the defense, at least during the regular season. But what is that going to look like? And what's been encouraging to me for the Cavs to start the season is that the answers aren't completely there yet, but like they seem to be on the right trajectory to figuring that stuff out. I think the most exciting portion of the start, which naturally you can throw in the strength of schedule caveat if you would like. It's been Detroit and Toronto and Washington. But process-wise, the ball is being spread out more. And more specifically, you are seeing a lot more usage for Evan Mobley to kind of lead to the overall balancing at the top of the roster. Evan Mobley currently leading the Cleveland Cavaliers in touches per game right now. I don't know if that holds, but like that speaks to where they're at. Like Mobley's first in touches at around 56 a game. Last year, it was Donovan Mitchell at 79, Darius Garland at 75. That's kind of skewed because they were out at different times, but just to highlight what kind of disparity there was. But now it's Evan Mobley. And watching the expansion of the ball, of the usage has been fun for me. Evan Mobley as a grab-and-go threat isn't entirely new. We saw shades of it last season. Evan Mobley running inverted pick-and-rolls isn't necessarily new. We saw shades of it last season. But the volume is up. And, buddy, some of the reps have been enticing to me. Like, even going back to the Cleveland-Toronto game in particular, it's just Evan Mobley in the first half just destroying worlds, it felt like. I'm just like, oh, if this is what he can do, this opens up a whole lot more for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, he just looks a lot more comfortable with the ball in his hands. I don't think it's perfect yet. The handle can be tighter. But they are entrusting him more to initiate, entrusting him more to attack. And I think the fact that he has the mindset for it on top of that, on those drives, he's continuing those shoulder bumps to carve out space. Even after some of the pivots, he's still putting up shots because he trusts that you just can't contest this. And I trust my touch to get the shot up. Like, I think that's an overall good sign. And when you combine that with the value that he is continuing to provide on the defensive end, they're asking him to switch quite a bit. He switched a little bit more than he was last year, and he's still been incredible in space. He's providing primary rim protection or secondary rim protection when he's at the rim. Finishing over Evan Mobley is a chore, to say the least. You add in those kind of things, like, that this should just be an all-star campaign for Evan Mobley if this keeps up. Like, he's been that good. And I'm excited to continue to watch him grow in this regard, particularly on the offensive end. Because if you can move him around, continue to sprinkle in the elbow stuff, and with him as a pick and roll threat, you have Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell that you can initiate offense with, and they can get to their spots and just put your defense in a bind. Like, I think the ceiling is very high for this group. So that portion has been fun through the Mobley lens. And with Darius Garland, one, just happy to see him back on the basketball court. Two, happy to see him aggressive on the basketball court. When he's seeing drop, there's a level of decisiveness that has perked up for him against drop. If you're two steps back, I'm just taking the pull up. I don't have to think about this too much. If you are in more of a traditional drop, I can lead the dance. And because he has the sleek handle, does a really good job of mixing in the hesitations and things like that. He does a really good job of engaging bigs and slipping in passes. One of the best lob passes in the league. Really good pocket passer. He just looks more comfortable running the offense. But overall, like, I think the shot hunting portion of the program for Darius Garland is what excites me the most. But even going to the other end of the floor, as, again, circling back to some of the defensive backcourt questions that you may have, I think I go back to the Detroit matchup that Cleveland had, where they were switching a ton, and that is Cade Cunningham hunting out Darius Garland on these switches. I think Garland did a really good job of battling. And even behind that switch attack, like, you saw the help creeping in. Like, it wasn't easy stuff for Cade Cunningham to get to. And so I think in general, if Darius Garland can hold up on switches, or at the very least, if the infrastructure is strong enough to where that isn't an easy basket, or you don't have to send pure double teams all the time and put the defense in rotation, I think ultimately you're going to be in a pretty good spot. And this is a good defense anyway. So Garland's looked good to me. Evan Mobley's been a lot of fun. Donovan Mitchell, I think, currently playing below his level on both ends of the floor. But then you look at that third quarter again against Detroit, to where he just takes over. It's like, okay, yeah, that's still in there. I'm not super worried long term or anything like that. It's been a nice start. I have another Cavs shout out, but I will let you get in with some general thoughts.
Well, you know, I'm intrigued monitoring this Nekias Cleveland Cavaliers scenario, but we'll talk about that later. I think the one thing for Cleveland, you nailed it on the head, the usage of Evan Mobley has been fun. Their ability to use him in different ways, like, hey, we'll run horns and then run a flare for you. I think his decisiveness has been really good. So when he drives, he's really looking to hit someone first. And that's been important. It builds on the work that he put in on the perimeter last year, to where, okay, I'm spaced, but I might shoot it. I might drive. Now it's okay, catch and go. It's not a lot of hesitation, which I think is important if he takes that step, because you know what Donovan Mitchell is going to do. Jared Allen is just, are you going to finish? Mm-hmm. If they get good Garland and good Mobley, again, they elevate as a team. So it's been fun to watch that. I think Dean Wade has been pretty fun to watch.
Welcome back, Dean Wade. Yeah,
I think with Cleveland, you know, even with Max Strus out, I think when you watch them, they have a belief in their guys. Like, they feel like they look like a team that feels like they have depth, which is, you know, might be internal, but they trust Okoro, they trust George Niang, they trust Caris LeVert, they trust Sam Merrill, they trust someone you're about to talk about. I think that there's value in that. And I think the biggest thing is the Cavs playing just with a better feel tempo-wise, to where, hey, we're not just starting this with 18 on the clock. We're getting it all across. We're getting into our sets. We're putting pressure on you. We're keeping it that way. That's been a key part and something we've talked about for years about the Cavs.
Pretty much,
Can they do this consistently? We saw them build on the movement last year. So I'll give a nod and a salute to JB. Kenny Atkinson coming in and saying, hey, we're doing this every single time. Just so you know, like, there's no wiggle room here. And that's key for them. So now if they can keep that up offensively, if that means a little bit of a shift defensively, they probably take that trade off. But they are still going to have the same question marks because Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, they're going to be put in action. So how are you going to react? Our defense is going to treat Evan Mobley a different way because of his level of play, or you still have to deal with that. So I think it's building the boat around what we have and what teams are going to do for us to try and elevate in the East.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, quickly on the Mobley front, I alluded to it, but while it is exciting that he is driving more, and I have stats on that towards the end of, like, the Cavs portion of this, but he's driving more, he's initiating more, et cetera. the decision making against some of the short closeouts that he's seen so far, when he's initially spaced and then gets to attack, it's going to have to be there. Like, there have been some travels because of the handle, but ultimately you do want a level of consistency with, I caught with space, I am driving immediately if that's going to be my decision. I have caught it with space, I am just taking the shot. And that's where, like, some of the corner threes that you've seen, whether they go in or not, I'm applauding them and putting a check mark in my notes just because, oh, this is a swing and an immediate shot for Evan Mobley. There wasn't much thinking. Getting rid of that hitch within the half court, I think, is really important for him in particular. And as for the other Cavs shout out, and I'm glad you got to Dean Wade, so I won't hang there too long on him in particular. Two-way play has been important. Can we talk about Ty Jerome real quick, who was also part of the I am just injured portion of the program for the Cavs last year? Through three games, Ty Jerome, 13.7 points, 4.3 assists in about 17 minutes a game. He is shooting 74% from the field. But beyond the actual numbers, some of the passes from Ty Jerome, he's the level of comfort that he just has in the middle of the floor has probably been, I guess I won't lie and say it's the most fun part of watching the Cavs, but like it's top three, top four for sure. You give that brother a drop, he is taking floaters that he probably shouldn't be, and he's knocking those in. And in general, he's doing a really good job of manipulating the big and engaging the big. And he is slipping in some absolutely absurd passes so far. He's put some crazy stuff on film to start. I don't think this is him, where he's at 14-4 and shooting over 70% from the field. But I do think his ability to make shots and his ability to play make and to make quick decisions with the ball, because like one of my favorite assists for him so far isn't even one of the fancy passes from him. It is just Cleveland brings the ball up. They toss it to him at the wing. Big gets a screen or wing gets a screen, cuts downfield. He just immediately hits him on the cut and it's a layup. It's like, okay, just having that level of decisiveness to your point about having the tempo up, I think that's been big. And to that tempo portion, Cleveland was 24th in pace last year. They're 12th right now. Don't know if it holds, but like that's a pretty big jump in where they've been at. So it's been good stuff on both ends of the floor. Again, strength of schedule caveat right now, but they are top three in offense and defense for cleaning the glass through the first three games. So if you are going to see less than stellar talent, it's encouraging to smash that talent. You know what I mean? It would be more of an issue if they were skating by these games against teams they're supposed to beat. Crush teams you're supposed to beat is generally a good indicator. So quick props to the Cleveland Cavaliers there. And then just a couple of numbers I want to cite on the front. Mention the Mobley drives. 13.1 drives per 100 possessions for Evan Mobley. That was at 7.5 last season. To speak to, again, the volume being a little bit louder on some of those. The Cavs as a whole currently have the most efficient pick and roll attack in the NBA. Again, early, you know, small sample size theater. But worth noting, Garland's looked good. Mitchell's looked good. And there's upside for Donovan Mitchell. Again, I think there's just room for him to play better on both ends. And he's still been pretty darn good to start the year. And with the Evan Mobley defense portion, I mentioned him executing multiple coverages and the switching perking up for him. 0.85 points per possession on any trip featuring a pick and roll defended by Mobley. Among 26 players to defend at least 50 so far, that is the fifth lowest mark. And of that 26 player group, nobody has switched at a higher rate than Evan Mobley. So he's been on the perimeter quite a bit and it's still been elite defense. So what a start for that young man. Did you have any more Cavs thoughts?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, there we go. Well, quick shout out to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Other team I want to shout out, we'll go quickly on these, but the Oklahoma City Thunder, one of my favorite teams to watch. They are also undefeated to start the season. The fact that they have been this good and they have won this convincingly, despite the three ball just not falling for the team at large, should be concerning for the rest of the league. And this Thunder team, which I, you know, cited quite a bit last year, they were top five in offense and defense. Them and Boston were the only two teams to rank them in the top five per cleaning the glass. They have been so good defensively to start this season. And you know what the funniest part of that is for me right now, Steve?
What's up?
I'll toss this with a question for you. How many minutes do you think Alex Caruso, Lou Dort, and Chet Holmgren have played together so far?
You're asking me, so it's like 27 or something like that?
They have played 9 minutes together. Per PvP stats, that three-man trio has logged 9 minutes together. And the Thunder have, by and large, the best defense in the league anyway. three games, three starting lineups. Alex Caruso has not started a game yet. They don't have Isaiah Hartenstein yet. And yet, they are still able to put together lineups in which Shea or Jalen Williams is the worst defender on the floor. And Jalen Williams was really good last year, and Shea was like a fringe all-defense candidate. And I think led the league in steals last year, or at the very least was top three in steals last year. And they can configure lineups in which one of those two dudes is the fifth best defender in the lineup. That is terrifying. I have enjoyed Alex Caruso just flying around and doing a little bit of everything on defense. The impact has been instant for him. Lu Dort has been his general irritant self defensively on and off the ball. Chet Holmgren has been an absolute monster to start the season on both ends. And we'll talk about the offense, but defensively, he's looked good in space. He's done a better job of absorbing contact. He's challenging everything. He's blocking just about everything. I think it is either 16 or 17 stocks through three games for Chet Holmgren. So if you just want to put box score numbers on it, it's been absurd. But just watching him possession by possession, he just has a real sense of where he needs to be. When he's on the perimeter, let me funnel to where the help is going to be. And I can still just challenge shots because my arms are 9 feet long. And on the offensive end, again, threes aren't falling, but they're still driving a ton. Something I forgot to mention on the Cavs portion, they're leading the league in drives right now. OKC second. So they're still driving with a high volume. They're still mixing in the guard-guard screens. They're still mixing in Spain pick and roll with all three players being guards. Shea is still boogieing inside the arc. And while the shot hasn't fallen to a high degree yet, encouraging to me, he's looking some of these pull-up threes in the face. Like, actually, I will just take this. You're already worried about my hard drives. You're already worried about the mid-range pull-ups. Now you're giving me space against the switch. I'm just taking this three. Or you're giving me drop early. You may be planning to go drop the switch. Oh, this is just a pocket of space. I will just take this without thinking about it. Shea averaged 30 last year while being, what, a 2.5 level scorer? Not that he can't hit threes, but like thinking about how defenses defend him, clearly they're more so worried about what he does inside the yard than outside of it. If Shea not only becomes a true three-level scorer, but is defended like a three-level scorer, it opens everything else up because they're already a team that can just dice you up with so many drives. They relocate well off the ball. Now you're adding Alex Caruso into the mix to where there's just no hitch with him, at least in terms of keeping the ball moving. I will continue to keep an eye on when he catches the ball in the corner. Is he just taking that or is he driving? What the case may be. But it's more, will he drive or shoot rather than how quickly is he going to do either of the things? So like even that's slightly different than someone like Josh Giddey, where he catches on the perimeter. You don't know if he's going to do either. And there's also a little bit of a hitch as he's thinking about it. So like just adding someone like Alex Caruso that can be used as a screener on and off the ball, can initiate some stuff if you want to get Jalen off ball or get Shea off ball. They're just moving teams around to such a degree. The offense is underwhelmed by the numbers, but it still looks good. So I remain impressed and excited about what the Thunder are and what they can be. And again, the threes are going to fall. I think they're 28th in three-point percentage right now.
Well, like they made 8 in each of the first two games. They had 16 in the first two. They made 16 in the last game against Atlanta. So
it's starting to perk up. And they just have so many dudes, man. I mentioned the multiple starting lineup so far. Like, I want to zoom out real quick. Aaron Wiggins has been very good for them since he's been there, really. Get the spot minutes he fills in, fills gaps where he needs to be. But so far this season, like I think back to the conversation we had about him, the three-point volume, and Mark Dagnall using Aaron Wiggins as an example. Like, hey, it's cool that you're shooting well from three. You could probably take more of these because we need defenses to care about you out there. To paraphrase, he didn't say it like that, but. But like it seems like he's taking that part to heart. Like he's hunting some of these shots from three, also hunting some shots inside the arc, some of these pull-ups. And he's already a really good ball mover. He's also a good defender. And the fact that the Thunder just have so many of these players they can cycle in. Aaron Wiggins, Casey Wallace has gotten a start. Isaiah Joe, I think, got the first start of the season. Not quite the defender of those two, but can hold his own, show real, you know, displayed real strides last season. And we know what kind of shooter and screener he can be. And there's just more for him. I don't want to do 30 minutes on the Thunder, so I'll save like the Usman Jane thoughts and stuff like that. But like, this is a really good basketball team and there's legit upside because the shooting hasn't been there yet.
Hey, I salute it. I imagine that you could do 30 more minutes on the Thunder. But I think for me, you nailed a whole lot of it. I probably add the internal development has been strong for the Thunder as far as getting more from their guys. I think it's just Chet's been really, really good. And you can use him in many different ways. So you mean, hey, you start in that corner. You never know what Chet Holmgren's going to do from that corner. He might get a dribble handoff. He might come up set a screen. He might space. He might cut. And so it's different ways you can use him. I've been intrigued by some of the drives from the elbow, some of the force on some of the drives, and some of the mid-range game. So if he's just going to say, okay, cool, I beat your closeout and I'm going to pull up, there's not much you can do with that. So that's been an interesting wrinkle for him. You hit Shade looking for those pull-up threes. Really key considering they do so many guard-guard screens. And you never know exactly which way you're going to go or how they're going to handle that. Lou Dort, very funny enough, Lou Dort shooting the three.
Very well. Like
pretty well.
Yeah.
Which is probably not what you would expect. And probably one of those things where you say, well, live with that. And no, I mean, you can until you don't. But I think their rotations have been more solid this year defensively. They're active. They're flying around. And, you know, they're building on the base they had last year. Yeah, it's a lot of drive and kick. But it's not every single time. We're going to put pressure on you with different actions. We're going to put pressure with our versatility. We're going to find ways to score the basketball. And then on this other end, you're not going to have a good time. Alex Crusoe, it's been just fantastic. Watch Alex Crusoe's weak side defense with the Thunder. This man's all over the place. And it's just a madman. And now they mix him in as a screener. It's going to be really fun. But yeah, the Chet drives is where have piqued my interest.
No, I like that. I like that. And then just some quick stats on the Thunder front before we move to another team. Again, I mentioned earlier, OKC has the best defense in the league right now, and Dort, Caruso, Chet have logged 9 minutes together. And when that perks up, good luck to your offense. To the defense point, 37 steals, second in the league, 30 blocks right now, which is first in the league. They are the only team in the league right now heading into Monday's action with at least 30 blocks and 30 steals. The offense, they're second in drives, bitching that portion. They're only 10th in field goal percentage, so there's room for upside on that front. We know Shea can get downhill. You mentioned the Chet drive, so some upside there. 28th in three-point percentage. The shot profile changed for OKC. Subtle shifts. Last season, they were 16th in rim pressure or rim rate, 9th in mid-range rate, 21st in three-point rate. So far this year, 7th at the rim, 18th in the mid-range, 17th from three, so not necessarily Morey ball, it ain't that extreme, but you are seeing a little bit of refinement with the shot profile. Again, going back to what Mark Dagnall said about being more willing to fire from deep in particular. And to the Shea portion, mentioned him hunting the pull-up threes. He's already taken 16 pull-up or step-back threes per second spectrum. Him getting comfortable with that shot is a good thing long-term. And so, want to sprinkle that in. 18th in offense, first in defense, third in net rating because of how good the defense has been for OKC through the first three games. And then just very quickly, want to shout out the Atlanta Hawks, a 2-on-1 start for them. I would just like to remind folks that Trae Young is very good at basketball. I don't know why that needs to be said, but apparently it does. So quick shout out to Trae Young for the scoring and playmaking blend that he has been providing pretty much his entire NBA career. Beyond that, what's up, Steve? I figured I would sprinkle that portion in. Beyond that, Clint looks solid, but I'm more excited about Onyeka Okongwu, what he's been able to do off the bench so far. Continuing to sprinkle in threes for Onyeka. Like last year, they were sprinkling in like exit screens for him to shoot from the corners. It's like, huh, that's interesting. Not doing it with real volume. And even right now, like the volume is super high, but he is still doing that. He's been better on the glass than he has been in years past. It's early. We'll see if that will sustain. Dyson Daniels has been, I've had a lot of fun watching Dyson Daniels so far. That Thunder game, it made me sad because I was super excited to talk about the Dyson Daniels offense on the pod today. Like, hey, he's being decisive. He's taking shots. He's making shots in addition to the defense stuff. And then he had the Thunder game where the shots weren't falling early and then he started passing up looks. So that was a little bit of old Dyson. But overall, he has been empowered to do a little bit more with the ball in his hands. And defensively, the screen navigation has been very good. The help defense has been very good. And beyond the shooting offensively, like the cutting has been unlocked. When you're playing with a passer like Trae Young, more of those windows are just available to you. And so you've gotten to see the off-ball feel that I feel like he's always had is just popping a little bit more in this situation in Atlanta because Trae will just find him. hasn't been the start to the season that I would like for Jalen Johnson, but you do see the flashes of, oh, hey, he's in early on the weak side. He can jump out of the gym and just contest and or block your shot. Also, pick and roll with Trae Young. He's on the short roll. This is terrifying because I don't know what he's going to do. It's in there. It hasn't been the most efficient start to the season, but that's been cool. Garrison Matthews, welcome back to the rotation as he is shooting the leather off of the basketball right now. DeAndre Hunter was also knocking down shots. So just quick hat to the Atlanta Hawks. Defense still has to hit a level, but they've done some good things so far. And then the last team that I'll mention would be the Orlando Magic. Defense still strong. Paolo and Franz Wagner, two players that I really want to focus in on here. We've talked about both. But Paolo Banchero continuing to put people underneath the basket on his drives and on his post-ups. Inverted pick and rolls for him, he feels a little bit more decisive, a little bit more aggressive about those. Like, you're trying to get out. Actually, I'm just chewing up the space before y'all can switch or get back out to where you're supposed to be. And I'm getting to the free throw line still. Also, you are ducking under or you're trying to switch. Here's a gap. I will just take this pull-up three. Similar to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, just tracking the progress on that front. How decisive will he be with those pull-up opportunities that he has? And Franz Wagner, very good driver, smart offensive player overall. He is hitting three so far. I would like for that to sustain. Because if he hits threes, in addition to the drives, in addition to the non-all defense level, but solid defense overall, that's a darn good wing. So I would just like for that to sustain. Jalen Suggs has been his usual madman self defensively. A little bit more initiation for him, but ultimately the defense has really popped. Second unit's been cool. So just wanted to give a quick hat tip to the Orlando Magic, who are still doing good things. I'm still reeling from the very mean things that they did to the Miami Heat in the second half of their opening game. But shout out to the Orlando Magic. Moving on. We generally start, if you're new to the pod, we usually start with teams that have impressed, and then we go into teams that make us think. So not necessarily pressing the big red button, but teams we're, you know, raising the brow on a little bit. And I would like to start the bidding with the Milwaukee Bucks. And so, again, I clarify, I am not pressing the big red button on the Bucks. I don't think their season's over. I don't think they're frauds or anything like that. So if you're looking for that to be the analysis, I'm sorry to disappoint you early on. But, like, just watching them through their first three games, multiple things was kind of stood out. But I guess to kind of focus it in, Dame looks really comfortable to start the year, which is a positive. I think Dame plus Giannis looks more comfortable, and I think that's a positive. Defensively for Milwaukee, the brow is raising for me. It's not quite like the Rock right now, but it's getting up there. Because, like, the first thing that I wrote down in my notes, just, you know, watching opening game for the Bucks, et cetera, and then going into the Bulls game and later the Nets game, this feels like a lot of ice coverage from Milwaukee. And that's not good or bad. It was just, hey, this seems different. And so naturally, looking up on Second Spectrum, they're icing a lot more screens than they did last year, doing so at a much higher rate than they did last year. And I was like, okay, well, I'm glad I'm not crazy. That part's cool. But where it kind of popped for me, particularly in the Bulls game, was because the Bulls were playing so fast, they couldn't get their back end set. Their guards couldn't get into the ball. And because Giannis and Brooke generally have just been in deep drops so far to start the year when they are trying to ice things, it's made the decision-making tree a lot clearer for ball handlers so far. And so if it's Zach LaVine or Josh Giddey or insert ball handler here for the Chicago Bulls during that game, it's just, I would just take two dribbles and then here's Vooch in the short roll or here's Vooch on a pop. Or if you just aren't set and Torian Prince is defending you, I have a possession in my head there. But okay, I just get downhill. Like, Zach LaVine had a couple of those in that game where I just dribble down, you're icing, I have an advantage. This turns to an ISO, I just knock down a pull-up over you. You probably take that from a shot quality standpoint if you're Milwaukee. But just in terms of being set, being able to kind of dictate terms with that coverage and force the ball where you want it to go, it hasn't felt like they've been able to do that consistently yet. So I am curious to see if that's just going to be the do better button or if Doc kind of dials down that coverage and they go to more switching in some of those situations. Do they ramp up the pressure and try to blitz? I don't know yet. Like, they did sprinkle in like a trap against Cam Thomas in the Nets game when they were initially trying to send it down the sideline. So, like, is that something to mix in? I don't know. That's just more of a bookmark thing for me. Like, okay, defense seems kind of interesting. But I think broader strokes, I am kind of curious to see what they look like against fast teams or teams that intend to play fast. Because the ice thing stood out, but they really just didn't do a great job of matching up. And like you saw that in some of the possessions where the Nets were trying to push. It's like, hey, can y'all get settled and establish your base defensively? Because if you can't do that, at least the regular, at least the postseason ceiling gets a little bit lower. Like you may be able to get away with it during the regular season because at the end of the day, you have Dame and Giannis. Like you should just be able to eat. You should be able to get 48 to 50 wins with those two if they're healthy. But they do have to clean up that portion of the program. So if there's a concern for me, it is how quickly they match up defensively and how much can they dictate. I think if they are able to dictate things at the rim, Brooke's still really good. Giannis has been very good to start the season. But it's been a little, it's been an interesting defensive start for them.
Can I add to it real quick?
Sure.
I think it's interesting because when you watch them at times, especially with their current starting lineup, you kind of see the juice that Gary Trent Jr. and Taurean Prince bring to that defense with their activity, their ability to rotate, their ability to deny. I think in that Nets game, we saw Dame deny dribble handoff. So that's the positive. I think the automatic nature of the ice or the blue or keeping it on the side is what puts them in trouble. And it puts so much pressure on the Bucks to navigate screens, mm-hmm. which is fantastic when you have the Jrue Holiday. It's not as fantastic when you don't have the Jrue Holiday. And so now you have, you know, Giannis in a deep drop, Dame pushing it to the side, but there's no real resistance. Weak side's not in. And now it's not necessarily the rim, it's the rotation out of it. And so mm-hmm. they've got to clean that portion up. And so you kind of have this weird mashup of, hey, there's more activity, there's a little bit more rotating, but we're giving better effort. This very specific thing is hurting us in multiple mm-hmm. lineups. And so we can't afford for pick and roll coverage to be this bad. So I just want to keep an eye and see if they build on that. Go ahead.
Okay, no, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. And then just quickly to the ice front, per second spectrum, most ice reps in the league right now at 52. On those trips in which they're in ice coverage, 1.2 points per possession allowed, which is very, 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 very bad. Now, again, that's only 52 reps. It's three games. That should improve. But that's why it's part of the eye-raising portion of the program for me, because I don't think that's an inherently bad coverage, but you do have to nail it, because otherwise they're just openings. And if the rotations aren't there, and if better teams, I would imagine, are just going to be more diligent about, if this is their coverage, let's make sure we space the floor in a way to where we can move Brooke around or we can move Giannis around and make those rotations a little bit tougher for Milwaukee to execute. It's important for them to kind of nail this stuff now. And then just in terms of the volume of 17.2 ice reps per 100 possessions so far, it was at 10.3 last year. And filtering for just the Doc Rivers portion of the program when he took over the team, 11.3. So still just a lot higher than last year. So I just wanted to put number to name there. But that's really the big thing for me. Because other than that, like, I like what Gary Trent Jr. is going to add to this team. In terms of the shooting, I would like for the navigation to be a little bit better for him. I would like the screen navigation to be better for DeLon Wright, too. As you know, I've been a longtime fan of DeLon Wright and what he does defensively. So I'm not super worried about him. But if you are asking these guys to navigate and stay attached to the ball, like, he's probably just the best guy on the roster at doing that. And if he isn't getting it done, then it just gets kind of hazy for Milwaukee. So want better from him. But ultimately, I do think he's going to be a good addition to the team. Gary's going to be good. Torian's going to be good. But just a little bit of a shaky start. So you'd like to see a little bit better there. Did you have a team that you wanted to put in this category?
I have a couple, just very, very okay. quickly. The Denver Nuggets are ninth in defensive rating, Nekias.
Take that.
Clap it up for the Nuggets. Unfortunately, the Denver Nuggets are 30th in offensive rating.
Ah, that's less than ideal.
I am not out on the Denver Nuggets, but I think it's pretty clear at the start, like, they can't afford certain things with this particular basketball team. They can't afford their defense to be at a certain level. It hasn't been bad, but they can't afford the lulls where the rotations aren't there or two on the ball automatic. Teams are playing out of that like the Clippers did against them. It's like, oh, you're going to be up. Cool. We'll just hit the short roll and play out of it. So they're going to have to find it defensively. They can't afford for Nikola Jokic to not be aggressive. Can't afford for Jamal Murray to not be aggressive. And they're going to have to work through this early in the season to find their way on both ends of the floor, find the best combinations for them, and understand the assignment with this team. I think that's the one thing about continuity and changes. A lot of times you have success and you have a formula and you have to work through that. You also have to kind of understand how your team has shifted and what that means for you. So now Michael Porter Jr.'s shot making becomes more important. Julian Strother's shot making becomes more important. So some of the things that you kind of used to be able to live with, it's a little different, you know? It's you're hitting the rainy day funds if you're Denver. So I just want to point that out. The Indiana Pacers, if the offense is going to slip, they can't necessarily afford that portion of the program. So just keep an eye on it. Not necessarily concerned as much. I've liked some of the Pascal Obi minutes, but they're going to have to really lock in. Because the East is tougher. I'll put it that way. I think there's a lot of belief for these teams right now. That's probably the only teams that are making me think right now. But Pelicans, maybe. Next week, maybe. That'll do.
Okay. We have the teams that make us think, and then the teams on notice section, I guess, to where we ain't talking about you yet, but just know if you keep this up, we will have a full-blown pod segment on you. I will include the Sacramento Kings. I will include the Miami Heat. Toss those two out there as, hey, okay. You in my notes. I ain't got enough to do 10 minutes on you right now and feel good about it. To like, you know, put you in one box or the other. I can talk about them. But just letting you know, I see you. I see you. Beyond that, any other, let's get to some player shout outs. Any players that you want to shout out that we haven't talked about with any of these teams?
Can I insert a free throw?
Sure.
Stronger Allen Iverson tribute this year, Trey Mann or Tyrese Maxey?
That's good. That's good.
We're back.
I tell you what. So I will go with Tyrese Maxey. He just has the Sixers boost that just gives him the edge here. You know, I mentioned the pull-up three stat with Shea.
Yeah.
And I guess also the pull-up three stat with Jason Tatum. Tyrese Maxey leading the NBA in a pull-up or step-back three so far.
Tyrese Maxey is averaging 31.3 points per game. Tyrese Maxey is averaging 28.7 field goals attempts per game. I'm a hoop. I'm going to get him up. That's why I asked the question.
I respect it.
So I will salute that. Jay Huff is such a Memphis Grizzly. It's not even funny. It's not even funny, man. Salute to Jay Huff. Block a shot, hit some shots, play some defense. Good stuff there. Buddy Hield.
Has he missed yet? It doesn't feel like he's missed yet.
All I know is I believe he 12 three-pointers in his first two games, tied for the most by any player in their first two games of a season in NBA history. So salute to Buddy Hield. He's been a fit. Oh, I can move and then shoot the ball. This is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I would like to give a shout out to Julius Randle. I feel like there was a lot of conversation after the first game from Julius Randle. I think his scoring is going to be important for Minnesota. I think his drives and his ability to attack mismatches are going to be important. It's going to take some time for them to figure out exactly how they want to use him. But I think there's potential with what Chris Finch has done and what Julius Randle could do. By the way, Julius Randle averaging 24 points, shooting 62% from the field, while also shooting 53% from three with a ginormous. How many assists does he have if I can read properly? Oh, he has 7 rebounds. He only has 4.3 assists, so he's down a little bit there. It's more assists than Jalen Brunson, but that seems like shade.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's crazy.
Can I add a quick Julius Randle thing?
Yeah.
So with the obvious caveat that when you get into tracking data, like post-ups versus ISOs can blur a line a little bit, depending on how they track it. But 1.58 points per possession on any trip featuring a Julius Randle post-up and 1.19 points per possession on any trip featuring a Julius Randle isolation. It probably doesn't feel that way because there is some catch and hold that, like me as a basketball watcher, I don't always enjoy. But it's been insanely efficient source. It's been an insanely efficient source of offense so far. So
hey, you know what else has been efficient? Klay Thompson from three this year. Just 50% on 11 attempts per game. Just want, you know, salute Clay. You notice the that trend I'm good. Going with here. Those are the players I want to shout out.
Okay, very cool. Well, then I'll go very quickly. Mention the Bulls when their Bucks match up. So very quickly, Zach LaVine, one, just welcome back to playing basketball. It's nice that you are healthy. Averaging 25 points per game, shooting 48% from three on nearly 8 attempts so far. And as I noted earlier, the Bulls are first in pace, and I think that really helps Zach LaVine. To where I can just attack early and often. You're not set. I can just get downhill. And I think one of the benefits of playing alongside and playing off of Josh Giddey is that man will throw anything. And so in transition, Zach can just run and trust that he's going to get the ball and get an easy attack at the rim. Or again, with some of these ice possessions, it's there. One thing that's really felt like a league-wide, it's pop league-wide for me as I'm just watching a bunch of games, because everybody in the league runs a variation of Chicago action, pin down into the handoff, et cetera. Because defense across the league, I guess excluding the Thunder, who have just been historically good, because defenses are still just trying to get settled in for the early portion of the season, so many teams are just getting free buckets off of, we know Chicago's coming. Actually, I'm just going to fake backdoor, and I am now open. And because Josh Giddey could just make that pass whenever, like, we're seeing more of the cutting from Zach LaVine is my broader point. But within that specifically, like, it's just free right now. What's up?
James Harden gets one backdoor cut off Chicago, and now you're saying everybody gets it. I see. I know what you are. I know what you are.
It ain't just that. Listen. You listen here, bud. This is not just that. But, hey, I will say, to bounce off of that, if James Harden's getting cuts as well. Listen. It's kind of crazy. But just wanted to note that portion. And then if you want, like, a nerdy stat on the Zach LaVine front, per second spectrum, he is outperforming his expected efficiency by 14.5 percentage points. For the quick hat tip to tough shot making, that is the fourth highest of 46 players to take at least 40 shots. You will never guess who number one is right now.
Sure won't. Who is it?
It is Jason Tatum. Shooting the leather off of the basketball. And speaking of shooting the basketball, very quickly, Julian Champagne of San Antonio. I like half jokingly made the tweet during the Mavs game, like, hey, he's kind of been their second best player tonight. That was also part of the problem. But we're not going to talk about that game too much. The Spurs also on the I see you list. So we'll see if they make an appearance on a YouTube episode in the next couple of weeks. But I want to shout out Julian Champagne, who is also shooting very well, shooting 50% from three on volume, also converting 63% of his twos. And so working hard on defense, it isn't great, but like he's been very active. He's gotten a lot of deflections, but the shooting has been the standout skill there. So getting some starts and producing in the role that they need him to. Last player I want to shout out is Brooklyn Nets guard Cam Thomas.
Are you okay?
I am. And so is Cam Thomas. Averaging roughly 31 points per game, 49% on twos, 46% on threes on nine attempts. I don't know if that portion of the program holds. Five boards, shade under three assists, two steals. So the assist numbers, and it's going to be funny in a Cam Thomas conversation or blurb, however you describe this, but I don't think the assist numbers do Cam Thomas's playmaking justice to start the season. I think he, at least through his, you know, within his own level, he's been playing some really mature basketball. It is a continuation of the growth that we saw in the second half of last season to where this is my coverage. This is what you're going to do. I am going to get off the ball. Even if it isn't an assist opportunity, just understanding if I go here and this person moves that way, I have a pass available to me and I can make it. And watching the Bucks game in particular, and that second half of the Bucks game, because that man just absolutely lost his mind from a shot making perspective. But it was him seeing ice and him saying, all right, cool. I'm just going to take two dribbles and then give the ball up. And I will move it. Oh, this is a deep drop from Giannis. Now is my opportunity to take this pull up three and cash it home. And so he will always have the insane shot making in his bag. But the fact that he's making the simple plays more consistently is a really encouraging sign to me. And so I wanted to make sure I shouted out Cam Thomas. And again, that Bucks game was fantastic stuff. Like the highlight pass for him was him leading the dance, picking up the dribble, and then tossing a pass that went off glass. I don't think the off glass portion was on purpose, but like manipulates the defense, tosses a pass to, I think, Nick Claxton and gets a bucket. I'm just like, you know what? That might've been a shot in the first half of last year. And he's just like, okay, I got two. Let me just move the ball. Like, it's cool. Again, it sounds very simple, very reductive, but he's just nailing that portion. And I like that. Cause if he's doing that and also averaging 30, like, I think you take that if you are the Brooklyn Nets. So I think that will close out the player shout outs for me.
All right.
Can I ask you a question before we get out of here?
Sure.
Something that I should have asked you at the top. So that's my apology for bad podcasting. But naturally, we've done team thoughts and player thoughts. league-wide, is there anything that's popping for you? An action that you're seeing more of, or teams doing more of X or less of X that's kind of popped for you in the opening week?
Full court pressure. Full court pressure from teams. Defenses aren't quite up to speed yet, but full court pressure has been one thing. A lot of elbow action, a lot of dribble handoffs, a lot of desire to take quicker threes around the league. I'll probably throw that out there. Mm. Also, before you answer yours, we do have news, by the way, that is broken while we are recording. So Shams has reported that Stephen Curry has sustained a left peroneal strain, will be reevaluated on Friday.
Okay.
Also, about an hour ago, the Connecticut Sun have said, we thank you, coach. We have parted ways with head coach Stephanie White. We want to thank Stephanie for her time in Connecticut and her commitment to our organization over the past two seasons, said Jen Rizzotti, Connecticut Sun president. We wish her the best in her future endeavors. How about you, my head's getting warm.
Well, I wonder what that future endeavor is going to be. We're going to circle back to that very quickly on the league wide front. Well, actually, before that, thank you for that, because I would have missed that and pressed end on the recording, and I would have been very upset. So thank you for that, first and foremost. As far as the league-wide things, like, the full court pressure was the biggest thing for me, which encouraged the search earlier this morning as I was doing some pod prep. So the league average for full court pressure right now per second spectrum is 26 possessions per game. You know what that number was last year, Steve?
13.
16.7.
Darn.
Solid guess. But, like, I don't know if, like, a plus 9 point whatever is just going to be the bit for this year. But, like, it's something that's popped on film. I'm glad it's caught for you. And the numbers certainly support that. Teams are just doing a whole lot more of that. So full court pressure is certainly up. The other thing I would note, as we've talked about the Lakers in particular and how they're switching a bunch, switch rate just seems up across the league right now. There are 8 teams currently switching at least 30% of the pick and rolls that they are facing. There were only 3 teams last year. And so I wonder, as you mentioned, defenses aren't super installed yet. How much of it is we don't have our stuff in yet? It's just early season, so let's just switch and simplify it before we can really lock into what we want to do, versus it actually just being more of a trend because 3-point volume, because drive and kick, increased pace, et cetera, et cetera. So something that I'm keeping an eye on, but teams are switching more and the full court pressure is up. As for the Stephanie White news, 1, wow. 2, if we can be respectfully messy, as we are, you know, about to end the pod shortly. Buddy, this has been on the wall for a minute, huh? Just a quick shout out to Annie Constable of the Chicago Sun-Times, who has just been on this for a while. It's like, hey, a lot of people expect Stephanie White to be the head coach of the Indiana Fever. And I'm just like, huh. Stephanie White is employed by the Connecticut Sun, and Christy Size is still here. This is interesting. And so eventually we get the Christy Sides news. And as Steve said, we now have the Stephanie White portion of the program. So I would imagine that 1+1 is going to equal 2 relatively soon. But Stephanie White's one heck of a coach. Christy Sides had one heck of a season. Wish her the best. And wow, we've had a lot of movement on the W side.
Oh, yeah. So, only what, 7 coaches?
Yeah.
In a 12-team league.
7 coaches. Yeah. Like, that's so much. And, like, I don't know. Like, hopefully that's it. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if there was one more.
Oh, heavens no. Hit the horns. Hit the horns. We are here.
It's just tough. It's just tough. And then the other piece in the news, as we get out of here, on the W side, the Aces announcing over the weekend that they are not going to be renewing the contract of general manager Natalie Williams. So they are going to be in the hunt for a new front office member. Restructuring was what the Aces statement said. So we will keep an eye. We'll probably have more news by the end of the week. So we will see on that front. Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Again, every Tuesday, we're on YouTube. Every Friday, it's audio only. But, you know, we will sprinkle in some other YouTube videos. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But that's going to be your basic schedule there if you're trying to keep track with us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Fun discussions and fun tweets being shared in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link will be in the description for you. If you have a League Pass account, come watch some hoops with us. Live analysis, live breakdowns, and a whole lot of hashtag nonsense. Complimentary. We just have a good time in there. We get to let the hair down. We're super serious talking about basketball on the pod, but in there, we get to let the hair down a little bit. So we have some fun watching hoop. So if you want to rock with us, click on that link. It's free to create your profile. No shenanigans there. If you ever have basketball questions for us, we sprinkle in mailbag episodes. But if you do have basketball questions at any time on the NBA or WNBA front, dunkerspot@yahoo.com is going to be the place to send in those emails. So don't be shy. We will get to them. Beyond that, we will catch y'all later in the week, friends.
Great show, Nikias. Why did the Miami Heat make a statue of Wade Jones?